Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire. But don't play with me, 'cause you're playing with fire.
Morning, welcome to Playing with Fire, Long Island's only food, wine, and lifestyle show. I'm your host, Tom Shodell, and I'm here with co-host and producer, Stu Schrager. Good morning, Stu.
Good morning, Tom. Is the weather warm enough for you?
You know, I've been rendering for like a week, and you would think that I'd lose some weight, you know? And I think I probably have, but it's really funny. What happens is, like, you know, you lose it in all the wrong places. Like, your gut never goes down, but your rings fall off, your watch comes off, you get everything else is skinny and have the same waistline. It's hilarious.
Well, it's funny. I mean, the name of the show, the name of your book, Playing with Fire, you're in the kitchen, it's very hot. Yeah. So you would think that you're used to this type of weather.
I am. And, you know, it doesn't really bother me so much. What bothers me sometimes is when the humidity gets so high, you feel like you need gills. You know, it's just, I'm on the line a couple of nights a week, and you know, it's probably 130 degrees back there without the humidity. And, you know, you add the humidity in, and it's like one big long wet T-shirt contest for us back there, you know. Just, you're just sweating through your clothes. It's crazy. But I think, you know, I really do believe that the steam and all of that stuff that's back there, it does something to your skin. Because, you know, my skin, my face is still, it's not wrinkled up or anything after all these years and all the abuse. It's still pretty smooth, and I think it has to do with the water and the steam.
Understood.
For all the ladies out there, if they, you know, they want to, you know, keep from getting wrinkles, stand in front of a hot oven for 40, 50 years, and it works wonders, you know.
So you talk about this heat, and the thing that comes to mind for some reason is clam bake.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what, in your mind, a clam bake is all about, what to include, how to prepare it. Is it something that can be done outdoors? Does it have to be prepared in the kitchen?
Yeah, I mean, I think the traditional clam bake should be on the beach. You know, that's kind of where it all started. They, you know, they would start to dig a hole in the sand, start a fire, and they had those clam bake pots, you know, where you line the bottom with seaweed, and then you put the lobsters in, and more seaweed, and you put the mussels in, or the clams, and more seaweed, and, you know, the fish, and then the shrimp on the top, or whatever. And that, to me, is, you know, the romance of it, you know. I mean, you can certainly do it at home, but it's just not the same without the sand in your teeth, and, you know, and, you know, the corn on the cob, and, you know, it's just something about being outside summer, and on the beach at night, you know, like, you know, 6:30, 7 o'clock. You know, you start that thing, and then by the time you get around to dessert or whatever, you know, the sun's going down. It's just beautiful. It's just a great time to be outside. You know, summer on Long Island, I mean, to me, is there's no place else I'd rather be in the world than, you know, like on a beach in East Hampton or Amagansett or up on the North Fork or whatever, or even Jones Beach, you know, for that matter. But, you know, it's a little quieter out east, so I prefer that. But you know, to just be outside and staring at the water with a, you know, gorgeous sunset, it just doesn't get any better, you know.
So my cooking capabilities are limited. And when it comes to shellfish, you've talked about grilled oysters, and you just put the oyster on the grill, and it opens up, and, mm-hmm. you know, you can put a little bit of butter or...
Yeah, flavored butter would be great in there, you know.
So now, steaming the clams for your clam bake, do you just put them in, and they open on their own?
Yeah, they do. Sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it takes a little bit of prodding, you know, to get the clams open. Like, I've run into the John Wayne of clams. I mean, you know, the guy just won't open, you know, and it's tough. And you have to, yeah, use the knife, you know. But I think that, you know, I'm not a big proponent of steaming clams. They tend to get rubbery. You know, I'd rather eat them on the half shell, or if you're going to cook them, you know, do a baked clam thing that's always popular, you know, seasoned breadcrumbs and a little garlic oil or whatever. And you know, those go like crazy. and make sure you leave the clams whole, but separate them from the shell. You know, what annoys me more than anything is if I go to a place and, you know, baked clams is like my, what do they call it, your, what's the word for that, your secret, God, I can't think of the expression, that it'll come to me anyway. You know, I'm supposed to be this high-end guy, and, you know, if I see baked clams, I get all sweaty, and I have to order them. You know, it's, like, pretty funny, you know. But, I'm trying to think of that expression again. It's not coming to me. But it's one of the things that I always order when I see them on the menu. And even if I'm going to have another appetizer, Gene just rolls her eyes, you know. But it's one of those things where I'll order, you know, a dozen or half a dozen just to, you know, to check them out because I love them so much, you know. But the thing that bothers me is sometimes the guys, when they open the clam, they won't separate it from the bottom shell. And then it's this fight, you know, to get the clam out of the shell, and you get the breadcrumbs on, and finally the clam lets go, and the breadcrumbs go two tables over. You know, it's one of the critical pieces of baked clamery, is to make sure that the clam is released from the muscle before you stuff it. You know, put the breadcrumbs on it, whatever you're gonna do.
So talking to baked clams, I guess there's two schools of thought. One is to have a diced clam. One is to have the whole clam. And then as far as the breading, if it's the whole clam just on top or if it's the chopped clam, you know, what the mixture is all about, how do you do it so that you don't lose the whole essence of it, which is really the clam?
Yeah, well, I think the chopped clam thing is kind of guilty pleasure is what I was trying to think of before. Baked clams are my guilty pleasure. That's what it is. Anyway, the problem with chopped clams is, you know, it was kind of developed to stretch the clam. You know, it's more breading than clam, and, you know, it's more of a money-making thing than the real deal. I mean, a baked clam is a baked clam, you know. It's a clam, C-L-A-M. It's one animal. It's not a bunch of chopped-up stuff or minced or whatever. And I think that those, although they can be tasty, the baked stuffed clams, I think they call them, you know. They can be tasty. I'm kind of a purist. I want to know that the clam in there is the clam that started out in that shell and finished in that shell, you know. I don't want some other clam from some other shell, you know, invading the turf here, you know. So I think that, you know, it's like you get all these, like, wayward clams that somehow wind up in other people's shells. It's just not right, you know.
Wait, so something just came together in my mind because I went to a local supermarket recently, and I asked about the jumbo baked clams, and they said, we haven't been able to get the shells lately. So what you're telling me is that they're making a mixture of clams from wherever they get the clams, and then they're just depositing in like a tray.
Yeah, well, they're basically, I mean, I've seen them in aluminum clamshell. They look like a clamshell made out of aluminum. And what they do is they buy frozen, you know, or canned clams or, you know, whatever, you know, maybe fresh shucked, although I doubt it. But, you know, they come frozen in like a milk container. And some people use them. And, you know, you'll get a lot more mileage out of those than you would for an actual baked clam because, you can, you know, there's only one clam, one shell. I mean, it is what it is. You know, the other one, you know, you may use a half a clam or a quarter clam, decided, you know, depending on the size of it, if it was, you know, bigger clams. And so, you know, the economics of it is different. So that's why I'm basically a purist. But it drives me crazy when I don't separate it from the shell. It's like I have a friend that owns a deli, right? Very successful deli. I mean, they do gazillions of dollars a year. And, you know, he's very good deli guy. And I asked him one day, what do you have against cutting the sandwich all the way through? I've never been to one deli where they cut the sandwich all the way through so you can eat it in the car without, you know, having a hazmat unit to clean the thing after you're done, you know. It's always same thing with bagel people. They do that one swipe with the serrated knife. They never get the whole thing cut, you know. And then it's a struggle. You got one hand on the wheel, you got one hand on the half a bagel with the other half a bagel hanging off it, you know. Now what? You know, between my knees, I'm trying to, you know, it's just nuts, you know. Just cut the thing in half, for God's sake. What's the tip, you know? How hard can it be? You know, it's crazy. Anyway, it's the same thing with the clam. Just make sure you know. And the clam, you know, the baked clam mixture, I mean, everybody has their own little recipe. But it's really easy to do. I mean, baked clams are a cinch. It's just open the clam, separate it from the shell, or I'll kill you. And then what you're going to do is you're going to take, like, panko or some kind of unseasoned breadcrumbs. And what I use is a mixture of, I go heavily on Romano cheese, Pecorino Romano cheese, a little bit of paprika just for the color, some dried, it's one of the few times I use dried herbs, I use dried oregano in there, salt and pepper. And that's really all you need. If you want it to go really, you know, kind of Italian restaurant-y, you can take, you know, garlic, chop it up, and soak it in oil. You know, you leave that chopped garlic in the oil, and that oil will take on the garlic flavor. And all you have to do is strain a little of that oil into the breadcrumbs, and it kind of wets them, you know. And you can do the same thing with butter. You can melt butter and just mix it in the breadcrumbs. It gives it a nice flavor. Or sometimes, like in a restaurant, if I don't do them often, obviously, but when I do them, I'll take a little ladle of melted butter, and I'll put it over each clam before I put it in, and another sprinkling of Romano cheese. And generally, you know, in Italy especially, cheese with seafood is a big no-no, you know.
You've taught me that.
Yeah, they believe that you can't really taste the flavor of the clams and the clam sauce or whatever. But I think in baked clams, it's almost more about the breadcrumb than the clam, you know. And that's really what's going to make or break your baked clams, you know, and it's what everybody's used to. So I would just check that recipe out. And you know, like I'm going to give you kind of a sort of off-the-head thing. You know, if you had a cup of breadcrumbs, I like to use panko crumbs because they're drier, you know, and they're not as fine. And, you know, I'll buzz them down. I'll do this in a food processor. I'll put, let's say, if you're going to use, I mean, I use a lot more than this, but if I was going to use a cup of breadcrumbs, I would probably use a half a cup of grated Romano cheese, Pecorino Romano cheese. I would probably use maybe a tablespoon of dried oregano, a teaspoon of salt, but maybe a quarter of a teaspoon of pepper, and maybe a half a teaspoon of paprika. And then just buzz that down in the food processor, and you got it. Now you can just, what I'll do is I'll sprinkle a little white wine on the clams when they're open, and then I'll put that breadcrumb mixture on, or I'll mix that breadcrumb mixture with, let's say, melted butter or a little bit of that garlic oil that I was talking about before, just to get the breadcrumbs moist. You know, then I top that with a little bit more of the grated Romano cheese, and then I bake them quickly. And you don't want to leave them in there too long, because you don't want the clam to be rubbery. I mean, you don't want it raw, because it's an odd texture. You know, you eat the breadcrumbs in a raw clam. You want it, you know, cooked through, but you don't want to, you know, be chewing on it for an hour, you know.
So let me ask you, a lot of times when baked clams are served, it's on a serving plate with some of the extra butter sauce with the breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Are you the type that would partake of dipping?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, I mean, that's what God made bread, you know. I got to get it moist enough to get down, you know. Yeah, I think that's all fun, you know. To me, that's fun eating. I mean, it's not serious. It's not like we're going to Bernardin and, you know, it's pilgrimage or we're going to a temple of gastronomy. It's just kind of fun, you know, peasant food that everybody kind of digs and gets into. And especially when you're talking about in the area of clam bake. You know, that's a roll your sleeves up kind of meal. You know, that's one of them, you know, hopefully you got some crabs in there and you can hit them with a mallet, you know, trying to pick the meat out. It's kind of a fun thing to do, you know. That's why I don't do them in restaurants because it's just, you know, you see these people that have, you know, there was a restaurant that had a dish called, they used to call it the splat, you know. And it was just this splat, you know, thing that came out on a tray, and it was mussels and clams and lobster, and you know, everybody's walking around with a bit.
Where did you have that? Because that brings back memories of the Lobster Inn.
Yeah, it's Southampton. That's exactly where it was. Yeah, the Lobster Inn in Southampton, right after the Shinnecock Canal, on your way into the Hamptons, it's on the left. Or it was.
Talk about legendary.
Oh yeah, that was there forever. You know, but you know, if I go to a restaurant, I don't want to wrestle with dinner, honestly. And, you know, I'm forced every once in a while by somebody else to wear decent clothes as much as I hate it. And, you know, you don't want to get all kinds of oil on it. So, yeah, for me, that's beach stuff, backyard stuff. That's stuff of, you know, I just look at that fun eating. It's just, you know, gather around people, you know, have some sparkling wine or beer or whatever your drug of choice is, and just roll up your sleeves and have at it, you know.
So you're talking about fun eating. So let me ask you this one. So what are your thoughts on a do-it-yourself hot dog bar? What is more traditional than hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill during the summer? However, when you have the burger, there's so many options, relish, this, that, and the other. Why not take a hot dog and have different options to put on that? Or is that, again, going crazy?
No, I think that all that stuff, all that fun food, you're kind of only limited by your imagination. And here's a funny kind of vignette off to the side. You know, I just did this big 4th of July party at the club. We had 950 people here or something, which is, that's a bunch of folks, right? So we had, I had a menu. I had some marinated steak. I had swordfish, hamburgers. I had ribs. I had fried chicken, you know, French fries, onion rings, all the, you know, all the usual suspects. And believe it or not, I sold very few steaks. They ate very few steaks. And it was almost all hand food, hot dogs, hamburgers, ribs, and chicken, you know. So, you know, I think what that tells me, and I sold almost no swordfish, you know, which was also an option, you know, for the people who profess to be, you know,
pescatarians.
Pescatarians or, on a diet or whatever. All that goes out the window with a good barbecue, you know. So, anyway, what it told me is that people have, a mind's eye view of what a barbecue is, and it doesn't include steak so much. You know, it's more like that, you know, 4th of July is hot dogs and hamburgers. Now, if you're going to do a hot dog bar, I used to do this thing called the home wrecker, and I called it the home wrecker kind of tongue-in-cheek because, you know, if you eat a hot dog with everything that I add on it, you may be asked to leave the house at some point. So we used to do, I used to wrap this hot dog in bacon, and I would kind of cook it in the bacon, and then I would put it on a roll, regular hot dog roll. And I had chili, I had avocado on there, I had a fried egg on there. We had onions, roasted onions on there. It was chipotle mayonnaise on there. It was crazy, you know. And, you know, I think we got $10 for it at Jewel's. It was kind of like a bar snack, you know. I mean, we sold tons of them. It was like a laugh, you know. Oh, another home wrecker, you know. There he goes, you know.
Well, you know, for the different accoutrements for this so-called hot dog bar, first of all, I start with mustard. There's obviously a variety of different mustards, but again, is there one mustard that really goes with a hot dog, or can you go with the different varieties?
I think you can go with varieties. I mean, personally, I like French's. I like yellow mustard, you know, with a hot dog. But, you know, there's a case to be made for, you know, grainy mustard or mustard with horseradish in it. You know, they're all in play. Let's do it all, you know. The one thing I don't like about, the hot dog toppings is that electric green relish. I mean, basically pickles, but there's not a pickle. I've never seen a pickle that green. I've never seen a cucumber that green. You know, it just doesn't. There's something in there that's that shouldn't be ingested. You know, it's emerald green. So my point of all this is if you like relish, if that's your thing, make your own.
So let me ask you this, Tom. Uh-huh. We're talking about the hot dog bar, and the way I see it, you start with mustard, and
right.
There's all types of mustard. There's deli mustard. There's regular French's, you know, yellow mustard, Grey Poupon. What are your thoughts
Brown
on all
Schweiger.
These different?
Yeah, I'm a yellow mustard guy. I just like French's mustard on a hot dog. But I think that you can make a case for any of them. I mean, you know, they all go. You know, it's a question of taste. There's a hot dog. There's a mustard out there that I think goes well with hot dogs that has horseradish in it, which is kind of a fun little nose clearer. You know, and again, you know, once you get past the mustards, you know, I think it'd be kind of fun to put out a couple of different ones, you know, and give people a choice. The other toppings, I would stay away from that electric green relish, you know, because there's some kind of food dye or something in there, because there's never been a vegetable that color ever, you know, and they're basically just pickles. So,
well, what I was thinking was anything from chopped onions, chopped tomatoes, obviously a sauerkraut, coleslaw. Things like that, but are there any things, you know, out of the norm that you might throw? I mean, like jalapeno, I don't know.
Yeah, well, I mean, even these hot dog places, they put everything on hot dogs now. I mean, they go Asian slaw, soy sauce.
Chili.
Chili. But I think that, you know, I don't really like raw onions on anything. I don't think it really enhances the flavor. It just burns. I like them cooked, so I would do, you know, a a sautéed onion. You know, they do that onion with like a little bit of ketchup in it. You know, you see those reddish brown onions.
Yeah, is that a ketchup sauce? It's like
there's usually some ketchup.
Because you can even buy that in the supermarket now. It's in a bag.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, again, make your own if you want to do that. It's easy enough. You just slice down an onion, sauté it down, and mix a little ketchup, and you're pretty much there. You know. Yeah, all of that stuff is good. You know, you can, you know, I like to make balsamic flavored onions because I think balsamic vinegar, you know, pretty much goes with everything. And then it's up to your imagination. I mean, there's chili, there's, you know, all kinds of slaws, a vegetable slaw, you can do an Asian slaw, you can do a traditional coleslaw. Sauerkraut is always good. I like to add a little apple and caraway to my sauerkraut.
How do you bridge the way from hot dogs to sausage? Now, I got to ask you, first of all, with hot dogs, I mean, is there a preferred roll that you like? I know that I can't get away from these potato rolls. To me, that's the ultimate. Incredible with a hot dog. I mean, a plain roll is good. It's just got to be fresh, nice and soft and fresh. But then when you get into the sausage and the sausage and peppers, and again, somewhere in the middle, there's probably bratwurst and stuff like that. Where do you go? To me, I can't have sausage and peppers on a hot dog roll.
Well, I don't know. I kind of like it. I have no problem with a hot dog roll. And you know, sausages are another fun thing because, you know, a hot dog essentially is a sausage. But, I mean, you know, the fun part about sausages is they come in all different, you know, colors and flavors and stripes. It's, you know, weisswurst and bratwurst and kabasi. And, I mean, it's endless, you know. We use venison sausage sometimes at the restaurants or... there's duck sausage out now, chicken sausages you have, you know. So there's all kinds of ways to go. I believe there are even vegan sausages if you go that way, you know. So, you know, again, I mean, the peppers and onions thing is kind of a traditional pairing, you know, with sausage. But, you know, any of those things work. You know, mustard works on sausages just like it does on hot dogs, you know. And you can do the same thing with the toppings. I mean, you know, it'd be a clash of cultures, but you can certainly put chili on a hot dog, I mean, on a sausage, you know, if you wanted to. And slaws and things like that, and jalapenos, you can make a little, you know, like salsa or whatever. It's all in play. I think it's good. And, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, people are looking for a little semolina bun, you know, or semolina roll for something like that because it's a little more traditional Italian. People think of sausage and peppers as an Italian thing. But it's probably really more German than Italian, honestly.
And when does the hot dog get, or the sausage get overcooked? You know, there's the people that definitely cook things too high in the grill, and it gets black. That's probably too much charcoal. But when is it the optimum presentation? When it splits? When, just before that? What's the deal?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's before it splits. I mean, listen, hot dog's already cooked when you get it, so you don't really have to cook it, you know. I mean, you basically want to, if you want it hot, you got to heat it through. But, you know, I have people who order hot, they want their hot dog well done, they want it burnt, they, you know, whatever. I think it's just a personal preference at that point. You know, nobody really cares about it but you. You know, if you're doing it on a professional level and you're serving them to the public and you're charging, that's a whole different story. I mean, you know, you got to make it look like it's, you know, good. But, yeah, I think that, you know, in your own hot dog cooking, I mean, I would cook it to the degree of doneness that you liked. You know, it's like drink the wine you like.
So hot dogs and cheese, does that match?
I'd like them to be mutually exclusive. you know, I don't, but, yeah, I guess so. You know, if you have a cheese sauce, you want to put that on there, I would warn you to make sure you have a bib on. You know, it's going to be a mess. But I wouldn't do that personally. I think that, you know, although when you think about it, sausages and cheese, you know, it's a natural pairing on cheese boards and cheese plates. You know, you have dried sausage, pepperoni, or salami, or, you know, any of those.
What about the craziness of ketchup on a hot dog, or a mixture of ketchup and mustard? Ketchup on one side of the bun and mustard on the other. I just don't believe in ketchup on a hot dog, and maybe some of our listeners will agree or disagree, but why not write in? Share your thoughts on this, but it's fire@whli.com, fire@whli.com, but to me, I don't understand ketchup on a hot dog.
It's not my thing either, but, you know, I'll give you a – I don't eat much in the way of hot dogs and hamburgers. Maybe I have 3 hamburgers a year, maybe. But I will tell you that I do use ketchup and mustard on it.
I do too.
I find it beguiling. I don't know why. And you know, since I started that 100 years ago, if I just have ketchup on it, it feels like I'm being cheated on or something, you know.
Well, down south, it seems to be very common to have ketchup and mustard on a hamburger.
Yeah.
Again, hamburger, it seems okay. But I know that even when we go to, when you're sort of in New York, Pennsylvania, Scranton, like, when you go to McDonald's or whatever, you know, if you don't ask to leave off the mustard, your hamburger has mustard and ketchup.
Yeah, it's, you know, I'm totally down for that, you know. I don't eat much McDonald's. You know, that's another thing. It's a once-a-year thing if I'm stuck on a highway somewhere and I'm starving. It's really the only time I ever go there. You know, it's usually the most consistent thing when you, you know, if I'm driving down to Florida, the Carolinas or something, I do that occasionally. And, you know, sometimes I'll stop if I'm desperate for food. Because sometimes it's hard, you know, it's hard to find, you know, restaurants that I'm looking for sometimes when you're on the road, you know. You don't know the area, you know, you don't know, you know, who's good and who's not. I mean, I remember going to, I had bought a house down in Florida years ago, and I was driving down with some furniture and things that I wanted to bring in that I couldn't really take on the plane. So I drove down. I got all the way to, what the hell's the name of it, Jacksonville. And so I did the straight shot to Jacksonville. By the time I got there, it was cross-eyed from driving, right? So I get out of the car. I rent the hotel room, and I go down to the concierge, and I said to her, I said, listen, if you, she was probably about 30 years old at the time, 28, something like that. Nice, pretty woman, you know, and I said, listen, if you were taking Brad Pitt to dinner tonight, money was no object, where would you go? And she goes, sir, have you ever been to the Red Lobster? And I'm like, oh, my God. You know what I mean? I'm screwed. So it's funny. I walk out of the building, right, and not knowing where I'm going to go, but I got to find something, right? So I walk out of the building. I'm going to get my car. Right across the street, I see this big sign, wine bar. I'm like, oh, my God, my prayers are answered, you know? I don't even care if they have food at this point, you know? So it turns out I go in there, and, you know, I had some cheese platter or what, a cheese board or whatever it was. It was fine. And decent wines. And I had a really good jazz piano player there. And I'm not really a jazz guy. I always thought jazz was like eight bad notes in a row. So I'll tell you a quick story about this. I was driving to Florida. I had some furniture for a house that I had bought, and I couldn't get it on the plane, so I decided to drive. And, you know, I got on the road, and I drove as long as I could until I got cross-eyed, and I wound up in Jacksonville, Florida, and I went into the hotel and, you know, checked in or whatever. And I was starving, so I wanted to get something to eat. And, you know, I don't know Jacksonville, right? So I go down to the concierge, this young woman, maybe 30 years old, and I asked her, I said, listen, if you were taking Brad Pitt to dinner tonight and money was no object, where would you go? And she goes, sir, have you ever been to the Red Lobster? It's phenomenal. And I'm like, oh, my God, I'm screwed, you know? So I wound up walking outside and thinking, I'll go somewhere and I'll, you know, look for a, you know, a Morton's or some kind of a steakhouse because, you know, every city has one, right? And I look across the street and it says, big neon sign says wine bar. I'm like, oh, my prayers are answered, right? So I go across the street. And it turns out that they had a pretty good selection of wine. They had a decent selection of cheeses. And a piano player who was a jazz guy, and, you know, I'm not a big jazz fan. My standard description of jazz is eight bad notes in a row. But the guy was so technically talented that he was jaw-dropping. I mean, you had to watch him. He was fabulous, you know. I'm not much for the music, but just watching the technique, you go, oh, my God, that guy can play, you know. So it was a fun night. I mean, I wound up having some good cheeses and some good wine and, you know, listened to some music and went to bed. It was great.
So that reminds me of a story. I had the opportunity to take a client to Broadway, and it was on the company's dime, so it was, you know, really within reason.
So you had an extra glass of wine is what you're telling me.
Well, I thought I would be having dinner in a nice restaurant and enjoying something that was a little above what I would normally do.
Right.
So we get into Manhattan. We actually had a limo, took the six of us in. And I said, where would you like to go? He goes, you know, the Olive Garden would be really nice. And I couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe that that's what I was in Manhattan and what my dinner was going to be.
Yeah, that's when you got to put your foot down and go, absolutely not, we're not doing it. I mean, I've vetoed, I can't tell you how many dinner, you know, suggestions of friends over the years. You know, my mother, I remember she was living in Babylon at the time when I had to visit her. And I said, come on, we'll go, I'll take you out to dinner. She says, okay, listen, we'll go to Sizzler. I have these two coupons. I'm like, you can't be serious. If somebody takes a picture of me in a Sizzler, I have to get out of the business or something. I don't know what to do. I'm not doing a coupon. B, I'm not going to Sizzler, you know. But I've vetoed hundreds of these over the years, you know. You just have to say no. There's just no way.
Well, you know, I got to tell you, you know, the unlimited salad and bread was no, it just didn't get me there.
No, you know, listen, you know, I know people, my father was one of them. My father judged the restaurant by how many sandwiches he could make for the next 3 or 4 days. You know what I mean? It was always a volume issue with him, you know. And he would make, like, you know, he'd go to B&B Clam and have scongeli, and it was unbelievable. They gave me so much. I had scongeli sandwiches for, like, 3 days. Yeah, okay, good, I guess, you know. But, you know, he used to give it ratings instead of stars. It was sandwich ratings, you know, 4-sandwich restaurant. I got it. I went to a 3-sandwich place the other night, you know. It was hilarious. But, you know, that's some people. It's about volume. It's about, you know, perceived value for the money, you know, whatever. But those aren't people who really like to eat out. I mean, those are people who eat because if they don't, they'll die. You know what I mean? It's that live to eat, eat to live thing, you know? And, you know, that's why I don't hang around with those people, because I don't, you know, I don't have anything against Olive Garden. It's just not my thing. You know, I don't have any interest in going there. And I'm sure they do a fine job at whatever level they're at. They certainly are more successful than I am. So, touche.
You know? Well, that's why I like discussing these things with you. You always have an interesting take on it. So now let's journey over to another interesting food item and your take on it, the lobster roll.
Lobster roll, to me, is sacrosanct. I mean, if you're going to kill this magnificent creature and you're going to, you know, end his life, then you better have enough respect to do something really cool with it. I've had some awful attempts at lobster rolls, and most of it has to do with money. You know, most of, you know, they buy frozen lobster meat or whatever. You just, if you're going to do this, do it, you know, and if you're not, don't. You know, don't screw around with frozen claw and tail, claw and knuckle meat, you know, because it's a little cheaper than, you know, the real, you know, frozen stuff, which is cheaper than the fresh stuff, which is the only stuff you should use for a lobster roll. And I think that when I make them, I generally make them, I mix them with very lightly with mayonnaise, a little bit of lemon juice and lemon zest, some fresh chives, salt and pepper, and some celery. And that's pretty much it. Because I think, you know, my friend Billy Holden, who owns Market Bistro and who owned West End Cafe for all of these, very, very talented chef, he puts a little tarragon in his. And I think that's a great idea. I like tarragon, so for me it's fine. But tarragon has that flavor that not everybody loves, and so I avoid that. You know, it's in that anise family, like basil and chervil, but it has a little stronger flavor. But he's, you know, he's steeped in the French cuisine, Billy. That's where he grew up, and so, you know, tarragon's a pretty popular herb with the French, and so he uses it. And he does it with restraint, and he does it with just so a hint there, and it's beautiful. I mean, he does a beautiful lobster roll. But I think that, you know, kind of the less you do to that, the better off you are. And I think you have to have a top split bun, and I think it has to be slathered with butter, you know, and toasted that way. And I use a very thin slice of tomato and bib lettuce on the inside, you know, to give it like a little base. And that's it, you know what I mean? And don't screw with it. Just make sure it's fresh. I can, you know, anybody, but, you know, being in the business and being around this stuff my whole life, I can spot frozen lobster a mile away, you know, just it's so obvious to me. Color changes, there's too much red. I mean, there's a lot of tells in there, a lot of, you know, giveaways in there that let you know that it was frozen. So, you know, if you've had the real deal, you know, you'll never go back to those old, you know, frozen, stinky lobster rolls. I don't know why people serve them. I'd rather, you know, right now lobster is very expensive. I mean, lobster meat, if I bought just lobster meat, it's like $55 a pound. So, you know, to make a decent lobster roll, I'd have to charge $40, $42 for a sandwich. It's like crazy. You know?
So would you be upset if there was no celery in it? I'm not a big uncooked celery guy.
No, I mean, you know, it wouldn't bother me. But I think it's all part of it, you know. And you know, whoever invented the lobster, I believe it was in New England, obviously, and probably Maine, I would think, since where all lobsters are. But yeah, you know, that was a traditional way to make it, and I think some things are better unscrewed with than you know, and some things, you know, benefit by, you know, tinkering and adjusting and this, that, and the other thing. I don't think lobster rolls are one of them. I think that if the lobster's fresh and, you know, you behave yourself with the mayonnaise, you know, celery or no celery, whatever, a little bit of chive to have that slight onion flavor in there, and I like a little lemon zest and a little bit of lemon juice just to cut the fat of the lobster, I think that's all you need. And then just have a great bun, you know, potato bun or whatever, but a top split, you know, and make sure that you toast those sides with butter. That's another.
So what, that's a whole interesting thing. So you answered the question about the toasted roll. Sometimes lobster rolls are served in a bun that's sort of it doesn't have the crust on the sides. So is that something that's cut off and then again toasted?
Yeah, that's the top split bun. Those sides are cut off at the factory. And what you got to do is, you know, some people take melted butter and just put it on the grill and put that on top. I'm a purist. I like to take whole butter and slather it on.
Mm.
You know, I think it's a different flavor than the melted butter. And so I take whole butter and slather it on. I toast that one side, then butter up the other side, flip it over, toast the other side, and then you're ready to go.
Sometimes you find in a lobster roll, I mean, again, I know a lobster comes in a shell. If I'm dissecting and enjoying a whole lobster, it's a mess in the shells and all that. But sometimes there's the crunchy membrane, I guess, when they're using the lobster meat for the and that just that's like sand in a spinach salad to me.
Yeah, egg salad, you know, shell in an egg salad. Yeah, well, listen, when you get you buy frozen lobster, you get processed lobster. And it's not like somebody's standing there picking over the meat. I mean, it's being removed by machines, and there's some human activity involved, obviously. But, you know, they're not as careful. Just, they're worried about economics, man. They're just trying to get it clean and packed and frozen and out to you. So I think there's a little less care given to the meticulous, you know, detailed part of making sure that doesn't happen. Where if you boil your own, you're the captain of the ship at that point, and you can make sure that doesn't happen. That's why, you know, again, I go back to the fact that if you're going to do a lobster roll, which to me is one of the highlights of the summer. I mean, I look forward to it every year. You know, I make them at the restaurants. I make them at the club, you know, when it's, you know, economically feasible. And, you know, I always save one for Tomas. And it's just, you know, to me, it's, you know, again, it's that sitting outside for lunch. You know, certain items I look at as lunch items, you know, and a lobster roll to me is that. And, you know, middle of the day, you know, on the deck of the Lure, you know, and looking out at the Peconic Bay, having a lobster roll, it doesn't get any better than that.
So you pair that with a nice coleslaw. Sometimes there's like a slaw that's not with the creamy sauce. It's more like a vinegar sauce.
Yeah. Yeah, slaws are just vegetable salads. I mean, you know, there's coleslaw, there's vegetable slaw, there's Asian vegetable slaw. You can do a carrot slaw. You can do a, you know, any kind of a fennel slaw, a fennel and apple slaw. There's all kinds of stuff to do. You know, and I do make coleslaw because people like it, you know, to some degree. But I tend to, when I do vegetable slaws, I tend to use more vinaigrettes than I do mayonnaise.
Gotcha. So I have to share a story this past weekend. Tom, you always talk about the difference between a so-called supermarket tomato and a farm tomato.
Sure.
And I live in Farmingdale, and on Main Street Farmingdale, in front of the Village Hall, every Sunday morning, there's a farmer's market. And there's anything from stuffed breads and pickles and vegetables from a local farm. And to me, it was nothing better. I was going to have a little Jewish soul food that morning, a bagel with some lox and cream cheese, and I wanted a nice tomato to put on it. So I ran down to Main Street. I went up to the vegetable stand, and I said, "You got a nice ripe tomato for me? The uglier, the better." And sure enough, it's funny because for whatever reason, when you go to the supermarket, all the vegetables are perfect. It's like a fashion show. It's all perfect. Yet you go to the farmer's market and there's ugly real vegetables.
Yeah,
and tasty and juicy.
It's the difference between Hollywood and you know, in any town, USA. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, it's all show. The reason for that is they're all engineered for shelf life, and they're engineered for, you know, eye appeal and all that. you know, again, like some of the worst peaches I've ever seen come from Long Island. I mean, they're horrible. They're hideous to look at, but flavor, there's nothing better. The best peach I've had in my life was from Long Island. Best tomato I've ever had in my life was Long Island.
The problem with that type of stuff is it's usually the mushier it is, the better it is. And yeah. It is tough to not embarrass yourself eating a peach or a nectarine or a plum.
Well, you definitely need short sleeves. That's why they grow them in the summer. But, you know, that's okay. It's part of summer, man. To me, it's just, you know, I remember being as a kid and you know, the weather would get warmer, and I was always a little bit of a freak anyway. And everybody was playing baseball. I'm out picking blueberries, you know, whatever. But it was, you know, it was this explosion of foods that I loved. I mean, I loved fish. I loved seafood. My aunt had a cottage, three cottages in Bayville, and we used to go spend like 2 weeks in the summer. And it was like being Huck Finn, blackberries in the woods, and I would go down to the dock and fish. My uncle had a boat. We used to go out fishing in a boat, or we'd go clamming or whatever, and bring all that back and have this, you know, kind of shore dinner kind of thing. It was just great, you know. And I remember basil and tomatoes. I remember my mother sitting on the stoop with a raw tomato with a little salt shaker, and she was just eating the tomato like an apple, and I was like horrified because, you know, when you're 9, you know what I mean, the tomato doesn't have the same appeal it has when you're 40, you know. So I'm thinking, geez, I mean, she should be eating something sweet, you know. But I didn't realize that, you know, tomatoes are fruit, right? So she was in there, you know, eating the tomato like it was an apple. But those sounds and those sights and those smells have stayed with me all these years. And, you know, to me, summer's my favorite time to cook because, you know, all the vegetables on Long Island are coming into their four, you know, it's a little tough in the winter when, you know, everything's cauliflower. You know, but the summer and the fall, I mean, just that transition between beginning of July and the beginning of, you know, November, it's just gorgeous. I mean, there's so much stuff available and fun to work with and fun to try out. And you know, I encourage people here on Playing with Fire always to try and, you know, stretch your cooking chops a little bit and take some, you know, take some liberties and give it a shot. Find a vegetable that you may not have dealt with before, you know, celery root or kohlrabi or something, and give it a whirl. I mean, there's just so much pleasure out there.
So here's a nice call out and interaction with our audience. Again, there's not been a lot of people sending in pictures or whatever, but it would be really cool to see pictures of people's vegetable gardens. If you have the ability to show us, you know, a big tomato from your garden or an unusually looking vegetable, or just send us a story about, gardening. But that would be pretty cool. I want to throw another thing at you here, Tom. If you're going out east, one of our listeners, and they were going to go to either a Mono or a Lure, two of your properties, first, share with everybody where they are. And what would be this week's suggested entree if you could pick one thing from each restaurant to exemplify the cuisine?
Well, the Mono is on Main Road in Matatuck. It's about, I don't know, depending on how far you hit an 8-iron, about an 8-iron east of Love Lane on the south side of the road. And you can't miss it. It's a white building, black awning, you know, big sign. Amano is kind of like a country-style Tuscan restaurant, you know. Has fun dishes on there. I think the pizzas kind of exemplify, you know, we have a wood oven there, and we do some interesting pizzas. You know, I do a fig and brisket pizza there. We do a mushroom and truffle pizza with a fried egg on it, which is kind of fun. And also we do a mini version of bistecca fiorentina, which is, you know, we do it with a ribeye. It's usually a porterhouse if you're in Italy, but they're too big, and I don't want to serve it for two. I want to do an individual portion. But it's served traditionally with arugula salad and a little bit of lemon Reggiano. You know, so we kind of do it that way. And then you continue on east to Allure, and Allure is in the Port of Egypt Marina in Southold, and it's just past the town of Southold on the way to Greenport on the south side. And it sits on the bay. It sits on the Peconic Bay, which is as beautiful a place as you'll ever see. And, you know, we have big windows in the place when it's cooler, and a huge deck seats about 150 outside. So there's always a good chance you get an outside table there. And, you know, there it's almost all seafood. You know, my partner Jeff, who's a chef there, he does this thing. He does this dish that's been, it sounds kind of odd, But he's been doing it for years, and it's as popular as it's ever been. We sell tons of it. He does this sautéed flounder with sweet potatoes and like a key lime beurre blanc. And it sounds like it doesn't work. When he first told me, I had the one eyebrow up, you know, giving him that look like, you got to be kidding me, dude, you know. But I give it to him. It does. It works well, and it sells like crazy. So if you're not going to go the Big Lobster route, which I always kind of recommend, especially in the summer on a deck looking out at the bay, I would check out the flounder and say hello to Jeff and tell him you heard about it on Playing with Fire, and I'm sure he'll... if he doesn't buy you a drink, at least he'll give you a smile and say hello.
There you go. So now I want to rile you up, Tom. This story is going to be much to your chagrin. So I'm talking to a friend who hasn't taken a vacation in forever. He's newly divorced, and his two teenage daughters were going down to visit. And this is, gets interesting, the maternal grandmother, grandfather. So they're down in Florida, and the girls, and the family lives in Massapequa, so they're very much about boating and stuff like that and fishing. So they're down in Florida, and they go deep sea fishing, and they caught a whole bunch of fish. So the captain on the boat says, you got to come back to my friend's restaurant, and he'll cook the fish up any which way you like it.
Good luck.
So tell me how that is a recipe for disaster.
Well, there was a guy that used to do that in Montauk every once in a while. He did it for about a month, and then that was the end of that. it all sounds, it's all fun and games till somebody gets hurt, Stu.
Wait. And I have to interrupt. So I said, how much do they charge at the restaurant to do this? And he goes, no charge. Just tell him Captain Jim sent you.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, I can imagine. I need Captain Jim. Like, I'd rather have a colostomy, you know. It's, anyway, you know, the thing is, look, you know, restaurants run because they're organized and you have a plan, right? You have a plan for the night. The French call it mise en place, which means everything's in place and ready to go, you know. And when you don't have your mise en place in place and ready to go, all kinds of things can happen. You know, you can't imagine what can go wrong. It's just... You know, and Murphy, you know, is alive and well in most restaurants, you know, kind of hanging out, just waiting, you know, waiting to strike. But the problem is, you know, there's a million ways to cook a million fish. So a million times a million is a gazillion. And, you know, that's how many ways you can get into trouble. All right, here's my fish. You know what? I like it blackened. No, I don't mind sauteed. You know what? I wouldn't mind mine grilled with a salsa. I don't want mine grilled or sauteed. I want it roasted, oven roasted. So now you have five people with five different preparations of the same thing, and you got a chef running around in circles like Benny Hill, you know what I mean, without the music. No, thank you, you know. I'll handle cooking around here. I don't need any suggestions. I'm way better at this than most people, you know what I mean? So just let us do what we do, for God's sake. And this is, it's so funny, you know. I never met anybody who didn't know how to run a restaurant. Everybody knows how to run a restaurant. I get told all the time how to run a restaurant. And it's hilarious. And sometimes it's, you know, if I've said this before, stop me, but I've been at, like, people's parties or gatherings where somebody will say something to me like, you know, my wife's lasagna is so good, I told her she should open up her own restaurant. And I'm torn between giggling and homicide, you know. The giggling part of me goes, okay, dude, whatever you do, don't mortgage the house, you know. And the other side of me says, you have so little respect for what I do. You think your wife can just open up a restaurant with a lasagna? The shit out of it. It's crazy. You know what I mean? So, I don't know which way to go. I don't know whether to laugh or kill him. You know what I mean? You just have any idea how difficult this is? You have any idea what it takes? No. A good yeah, okay, she makes good lasagna. Who cares? There's thousands of good lasagnas out there. You know? Oh, I'm telling you, it's comical. So anyway, I mean, it's a roundabout way of saying I think it was a really terrible idea. Fish any way you want it. Oh, God, please. It's all I need is a captain, you know, suggesting it too, you know.
So as we get close to the end of the show, I just wanted to give a shout-out to a local restaurant that I had the opportunity of dining in last weekend, and it was Dodice in Rockville Center.
Oh, I haven't been there in years. How was it? Good?
It was really, really nice. And, yeah. And you know, in today's world, as people are becoming more relaxed about the pandemic in a good way, the restaurant was packed. I chose to have branzino. And it was the waiter asked me how I would like it prepared, and he said, "Would you like it as a whole fish or filleted?" I went fillet, And it was great. I mean, again, as we've talked about before, if you order fresh fish, you have to understand that there might be a bone involved. But they had done a fabulous job of filleting the fish. It was great. It was in a nice sauce. It was just perfect with I had to get some artichoke. It was just perfect. How would you have gone? Would you have gone with the whole fish or the filleted fish?
Depends on who I was with. You know, I kind of prefer fillet because I don't really feel like working, you know, my meal so much. You know, if the waiter's going to fillet for me, that's fine. If I'm out with Jean, on the other hand, she prefers the bones, you know. So she prefers to have the fish whole. So guess who wins, you know. But bottom line is, there's a case to be made for both ways. I mean, you know, things cooked on the bone tend to have more flavor just because the bones add flavor. I mean, that's why they use bones to make stock. I mean, there's flavor in the bones. But I don't think it's so much different that, for me, it's not worth wrestling around with dinner. You know, I just want to go, again, I work probably 70, 80 hours a week most weeks. And even now, 80 is probably a lot. But, you know, I do 60 to 70 for sure. And, you know, I just kind of want to relax. I want to work when I get out. I fillet fish all day, you know. I mean, the last thing I want to do is do it when I'm
gotcha.
Playing.
So now, say you get served a nice portion of fish. I mean, obviously, it depends on the size of the fish they serve. And you can't eat the whole thing. I don't know. Are you the type of guy that would take it home? If you do, how many days will you let it set before you toss it?
Yeah, I generally never have trouble finishing things, but I don't really take a lot of food home. I dine with people who do, and that's fine. You know, stuff lasts a lot longer than people think, honestly. You know, I know people who, you know, the second day, oh, my God, I got to throw it out. It's been here a day. I'm thinking you got 5 or 6 days before you even have to think about that. So, you know, but people, I think they tend to err on the side of safety when it comes to food. But I think there's a little bit more paranoia out there about that than needs to be because the stuff holds up pretty well, most of it, you know.
So, you know, you just mentioned that it's been a while since you've been to Dough DJ, and that just jogged my memory. You had a restaurant that you consulted on that was like a couple of doors down.
Yeah, that was for Roseanne. That was a fun place, you know. But, again, it was run by, you know, basically this guy bought his wife a restaurant so she had a place to wear her clothes, you know what I mean? And it was really kind of funny. I said, you know,
hi, Roseanne. Hope you're listening.
You'd have been better off buying a department store. You know what I mean? It would have been cheaper. You know, so yeah, Roseanne's an old friend. She's great. But she's divorced and remarried now. But that's basically why the husband, you know, would keep her out of the house or whatever.
Am I correct that that restaurant had like a little bit of a garden in the back that had seating?
Yeah, had a little seating outside. I'm trying to think of the name. It was her daughter's name, Gabrielle. So it was called Gabrielle's, and. You know, it was just, you can't play at running a restaurant. You either run it or you don't. And the people who don't know anything about it play at being a restaurateur. And I don't mean that in a flippant way. I just mean it that this is a lot harder than it looks. I mean, way lot harder than it looks. And to come in, you know, kind of half-assed and, you know, and I've done it, you know, and I know what to do. And I've come in on tepid, you know, on the location or whatever, and you can see it right away. If you're not engaged 150%, that ain't working. And so the people who don't know about running restaurants or think they know about running restaurants because they've eaten in two of them, you know, they get in there, and it's like all of a sudden, a month later, what happened, you know? what's going on? They don't know. You know. The chef's ripping them off. There's money going out the back door. The bartender's got everybody on scholarship. You know, the guy's not weighing the food when it comes in. The purveyor's beating them out of poundage. It's just a million ways to go wrong, you know. And you really need a lot of experience to pull it off. That's why the guys who are good at it, you know, have multiple units and are able to survive it. And the rest of them, they go out pretty quickly. And listen, it's happened to me. I mean, I'm pretty experienced at this. But, you know, nobody bats 1,000 in this business. And it can happen for a lot of different reasons. So my advice to people who aren't in the restaurant business is to stay out of it. You know, mind your own business, damn it. You know, stay out of it because it's, you know, it's a meat grinder, and if you're not prepared for it, you know, it's a handful. It's a handful.
So, Tom, believe it or not, we are out of time. Really? And you have to understand, usually Tom is the timekeeper, but we're actually doing this show from two different locales.
Yeah.
I'm here in Farmingdale, and Tom's in Brookville, I believe.
I'm in Pebble Beach. I'm on the 18th hole of Pebble Beach, in my mind. Anyway, so I guess we got to close the show with Tom's Three Keys to Life, which is always... life is too short to drink bad wine. Treat every meal like it was your last, and keep chocolate in your life as important as sex and pizza. And thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Sweet Fancy Long Island is the award-winning dessert and pastry company that has become one of the hottest sources for bakery treats available for delivery on Long Island. Each mouth-watering creation has a personality all its own, teasing the palate with its rich flavors, complex textures, and eye-catching presentations. All items at Sweet Fancy Long Island are made 100% from scratch using the highest quality ingredients: Belgian chocolate, European butter, vanilla beans from Tahiti, and the richest, most flavorful fruits available. Their clients can enjoy any one of our delectable confections from one-of-a-kind pastries, specialty and occasion cakes, French macarons, and karma cups. Their signature line includes an assortment of charming personalized sized desserts served in miniature mason jars. The Sweet Fancy Long Island team takes great pride in presenting a unique, delicious, and elegant dessert experience, and works closely with every client to create a memorable dessert that will add an exciting dimension to any celebration. Presently, the work of Sweet Fancy Long Island have been found in some of the area's top restaurants, country clubs, gourmet shops, catering facilities, and Food Network. Go to sweetfancyli.com to order online or to view their incredible gallery of desserts.
Amano Osteria and Wine Bar has been created by Adam Lovett and Tom Shordell to bring the feel and flavors of a true Tuscan Osteria to the North Fork. Amano showcases local growers, farmers, cheese, and winemakers, marrying their ingredients with the taste traditions of the Tuscan countryside. The casual appeal, the flavors of Italy, and a moderate price structure appeal to all, ensuring year-round patronage. This North Fork eatery sends out snappy salads and seafood, pastas and antipasta, along with a respectable wine list. Amano features local vineyards and Italian varietals from the U.S. and Italian wines. The kitchen remains open until 11 and has established a later dining crowd, sparking a local nightlife dining scene. Amano is on the cutting edge of a new high-quality and affordable dining experience on the North Fork. Amano Osteria and Wine Bar, 13550 Main Road in Matatuck. Serving dinner daily, Amano is also open for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. For reservations and further information, call them at 631-298-4800 or visit them on the web at amanorestaurant.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.